The time is 6:59. Up next, K2's broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. Stay tuned.
Start with a flag salute. Ms. Hale, would you lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ms. Hale. Madam Clerk, would you call roll, please?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Bryson.
Present.
Mr. Edwardson.
Here.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Here.
Ms. Hale.
Here.
Ms. Hughes-Scandies.
Here.
Mr. Jones.
Here.
Mr. Smith.
Here.
Ms. Treem.
Here.
Mayor Weldon.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We have no special order of business, so we'll move on to approval of minutes. For the first one, November 4th, Ms. Treem.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I did not find any changes to make, so I move that we approve the minutes.
All right. Any objections to approving November 4th meeting minutes? All right. Those are approved. And then for the rest, Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that there were very minor corrections to the November 25th, 2019 minutes. I have provided those to the municipal clerk, and I move that we approve those minutes, the December 5th and the December 18th minutes, and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objection to the approval of minutes? Seeing and hearing none, those minutes are approved. Brings us to manager's request for agenda changes.
No changes, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Public participation on non-agenda items. All right, looks like we just have one testimony for non-agenda items. So, Vicki Jo Kennedy. So, please come to the mic and state your name and the area of town you live, please. And you have 3 minutes.
Ms. Yes, Kennedy. Ma'am. Thank you. Hello, Vicki Jo Kennedy, and I live on Cinema Drive in the Valley. And when I came here in December, I told you I lived in a very interesting place. And since then, one of our JPD officers did have to perform his duty. It was either his EOW or he had to do what he was paid and trained to do. Things have gotten somewhat better since then. But tonight I'm here to ask you one more time about the caravans. And I have talked to several people. Greg's helped, and Bryson, I kind of boogered up his show today with it. I'm still very unhappy with these caravans. Almost 2 years. I was wrong thinking they'd been sitting out there for a year, ready to go, rusting in the rain. It's been almost 2 years. They need to get on the road. No ifs, ands, or buts. We were down to 3 caravans last Thursday during the blizzard. Today, we kept 4 running. I say we, I'm a rider, not a driver. I have nothing to do with them. But they're cannibalizing the old ones in order to keep some of them running. And this is ludicrous because we have these new ones sitting out at the bus barn. And I've been asked by, yes, Mr. Bryson, today on the radio, have you seen these caravans? Yes, I have. You can go see them yourself. Go out to the industrial boulevard thingy ding and go out to that bus barn. You can see them too. But I didn't trespass. I didn't go through that gate. I could see approximately 5. I've been told there's 10. But some are going to villages, so that I understand. But why have they been sitting for 2 years? I was told by a purchaser in December when I called 2 days later, after when I came in here on, I think, the 9th or 10th, oh, we signed the contract, it's all ready to go. She said, well, we have to paint all the logos and everything. I said, ma'am, don't lie to me. I said, I've been out there. The Capital Access is already on them. So here in the last week, I've been told, oh, well, we got to finish putting radios in them. Radios. Well, they've been sitting there for 2 years. How long does it take to put communication radios in them? These need to get on the road, and they need to get on the road yesterday. And I'm sorry if I'm going to get a little heated, but that's the way I get when it gets a little rough like this. We're talking about seniors here. Yes, I am privileged to be a senior now, but I am not a senior elder. And I do beep at me all you want. But please get them on the road. We have seniors that need to get to dialysis. It's critical. Just get them on the road. I'm tired of hearing next month, the first of next month. Please, CBJ, do the right thing. Get these vans on the road.
Thank you. Thank Ms. you. Kennedy. Are there any questions for Ms. Kennedy?
Probably not.
Thank Mayor.
You. Oh, Ms. Hale.
I do have an update.
Okay, Ms. Hale, would you like to give us an update?
Yes, I would. We are intending to have an update on Caravan at the Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting, which will be a week from today on February 10th at noon. So we will have an update then. Can you hear me?
Thank you, Ms. Hale.
Would you like me to repeat that? Okay.
There we go. Okay. Does anybody else want to speak at public participation on non-agenda items that didn't get a chance to sign up?
We got on the wrong list.
Come on up.
I'll give you mine. My name is Kristen Garreau. I'm here as the principal at Yokosuka Dakahiti High School. We had a meeting in October, and we collected some information from our students and some other stakeholders in our school community, and we wanted a chance to share that with you briefly tonight. So I have a few students and staff who are here and who participated in that, and I'll turn it over to Max, who can share some of the feedback that we wanted to share specifically with our elected officials. Thanks.
Thank you.
What's up, guys? My name is Max. We go to Yakus. So we made this list, just like some big points that we wanted to share with you guys. We wanted to share that we have a very strong bond with our teachers, our students. You know, every time we walk into school, Caitlin says good morning to everyone. You know, we feel, you know, welcome, safe, and everything. We also wanted to share that the school needs an update because, you know, obviously TM's a brand new school. JD gets worked on all the time, and we, you know, feeling left out, man. We feel the students deserve the best, obviously, because we go to the school, you know, every day. We don't want to feel like we're behind the other schools. And, you know, obviously not all the students feel that way, but some of us do feel that way. The teachers are very understanding. Like I said right in the beginning, Caitlin says hello. We see the teachers in the hallway. You know, we say hi, how's your day? I already said this. Yakus gets forgotten. Great examples. I actually just went to a JDTM game, and I walked in, and I said, oh, I'm a student. And they said, oh, JD or TM. And I was like, whatever, dude. So obviously we do feel forgotten. Majority of the students do feel that way. You know, we don't want to feel like that second kind of, you know what I mean? What would you call it? All right, whatever. But they're smaller classes, so that's why we feel we have great relationships with our teachers, our students. You know, we see the same people every single day. Like I said, we see our teachers a lot more, which is great for us. You know, having a strong relationship with the teacher is great. It's a better learning environment. You know, if we have a real question, we feel we can ask them. We feel like we're a community, you know, I can't bring that up enough. The relationship with the teachers is great. New lockers. We don't even get to use our lockers, so it'd be kind of cool if we got some new lockers. We need reliable transportation. Every time we go to a site council meeting, a super site council meeting, we bring this up, and it kind of gets shoved away. One of our teachers got upset because one of the people there were like, well, you guys are a different school. You know, that's kind of the forgotten kind of part thing. And, we we're students. We're trying to learn. We're trying to graduate. And obviously we need transportation. We got kids taking city buses. We got students contacting other students to try to get to school to learn, to get an education. Yeah. Obviously, this is the future. Can't forget that. Come on, guys. Just messing with you guys. This is some of the things the community can do for us. So the food, I think food is probably one of the biggest things because we got kids in all sorts of different situations, you know, just like other schools too. But at Coos, it seems like, some kids don't have food at home. So when they get to school, you know, they kind of rely on the breakfast. They rely on the lunch. They rely on snacks. So food would be pretty big for us. We need a safe place to hang out. So our commons is also used for a Plato class, which is an online class. So we can't have kids trying to learn and kids that are going through different things in the same classroom because, you know, that could affect both sides. I feel like I hit some of the big parts. Yeah, oh, I like this one. This is probably my favorite one. Help teens get a driver's license or permits. You know, that's getting them ready for life. You know, that's just, there's education and there's life. And I just feel like that's a big part. And, you know, obviously if we can't get a school bus to help us get to school, maybe like a city bus kind of thing, like a bus pass. That's all I got. That's all I got to say. You know, I just wanted to come here and show face so that we're part of this community. And thanks for having me up here.
Before you leave, Max, what was your last name again? I didn't catch it.
Wheat.
Wheat?
Yeah.
Would you introduce any other students you have from your school?
Yeah, I got two students over there, but I don't know if they want to talk.
Just introduce them. Just say what
that's
their
Davis. Davis, raise your hand. And then that's Moni. And Caitlin. Caitlin's the one I was talking about. You know, she's like our cornerstone. You know, she helps us a lot. She's like a rover. You know, she helps us there, helps us over there, helps the students. So we really appreciate Caitlin.
Any questions for Mr. Reed?
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having
me. All right, thank you, guys.
Mr. Bryson has a question.
Yes. How many students are at Yakus?
You'd have to ask my principal.
About 90.
90. Thank you.
90.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to testify on non-agenda items? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go to the consent agenda. Any public requests for consent? Yes, Ms. Lash.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to let the students know who came and who might think we're ignoring their comments. Right now, we just go on with the meeting, and at the end, we have a special time to ask questions. So if we're not ignoring what you just said, we're just do that later. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lashefsky. Any public requests for consent agenda changes other than ordinances for introduction? Seeing and hearing none, any assembly requests for consent agenda changes? Assembly action. Ms. Bodashevsky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the consent agenda is moved. That brings us, I'll talk slower, to public hearing. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2019-30, an ordinance related to the regulation of nuisance properties.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
Over the last 5 years, the City and Borough of Juneau has dealt with multiple properties that received an inordinate amount of city resources. These properties have required years of time, attention, and resources from entities including Community Development, Engineering and Public Works, Law Department, City Assembly, and first responders like the Police Department and Capital City Fire Rescue in an effort to abate the problems. Neighborhoods affected by these problem properties feel the process is inefficient and resolutions are far too slow. The chronic nuisance ordinance will give the city a tool to ensure neighborhoods are not subject to problem properties for extended periods of time and to hold landlords and tenants accountable for their actions. The chronic nuisance concept was presented to the Assembly Committee of the Whole on May 20th, June 10th, and September 23rd, 2019. Public testimony regarding the ordinance was taken at the Committee of the Whole on December 9, 2019, and the committee recommended the ordinance be forwarded to the Assembly. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. I don't see anybody signed up for public comment. Is there any public comment on this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it to the Assembly. Mr. Bryson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2019-30, an ordinance related to the regulation of nuisance property, and I ask for unanimous consent.
I object.
Okay, you want to speak to your objection, Ms. Hughes-Candies?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I wanted to like this ordinance. I really did, and I appreciate the work staff has done and the various times that we've taken a look at it in the COW in trying to get it closer to addressing some of the initial concerns the Assembly had. My greatest concern is that if we pass this ordinance that there's going to be a situation where there's someone who's in need of help, who should be calling 911, who doesn't for fear of losing their housing. 59% of women in Alaska have experienced intimate partner violence or sexual violence or both, and domestic abuse survivors are already more likely to experience housing instability. So we've exempted these things in this ordinance, but in the reality, what we can't build into the ordinance is the ability of the Assembly or the ability of the city to make sure that a landlord is not evicting someone who called the cops because their soccer came. It sounds like a lot. It seems common sense that if somebody's calling the police that many times within a 12-month period, but the city is not going to have the ability to build in those safeguards. And my concern is that this is going to weaken the housing rights and the sort of fundamental right to call for help when it's needed for some of our most vulnerable citizens. This was sort of inspired by a few exceptional situations, and we wanted to come up with an ordinance that would fix those and empower the police department and, as Mr. Manager just said, rectify the situation for neighbors who are experiencing something chronic going on in their neighborhood. But if we pass this ordinance, it's going to go into effect for every house in the borough. And I think the unintended consequences of the ordinance are just too dangerous, and I think it's too broad a brush. And so in trying to get there, I wasn't able to get there. And I think it's just too dangerous to change our fundamental relationship to the police.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes-Candies. Ms. Treem.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a question for Mr. Attorney. I have actually a couple of questions about the definitions in here, and I'll start with one and might have more later. On page 3 of the ordinance, that's packet page 61, line 18, 19, number 5, these are the exceptions that don't qualify as nuisance activities. So my question is about number 5. A report of medical emergency for serious bodily injury or death. What makes bodily injury or death serious? What's the threshold there?
Journey.
Sure. This provision, number 5, was added to enable people who need medical aid by transport from something like CCFR ambulances to get to the hospital to an emergency room. There is obviously a little bit of gray as to what's a serious bodily injury. Death is obviously straightforward, but we're trying to prevent that from happening. And so it's the concept would be you would need some type of ambulance transport to get to the hospital.
Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you. That, and I didn't think of that question, but now that Ms. Preem brought up that question, it does seem like there should be some kind of definite definition, say, for example, for federal law enforcement, serious bodily injury would be broken bones, unconsciousness, dismemberment, something like that. There's a set list of what it is, and you can kind of extrapolate what else might belong in there just because of the nature of what's on the list. There's nothing similar in our guidance.
We have not explicitly codified it in this ordinance. We can if that's a desire of the assembly.
Ms. Treme, you have another question?
No, not a question. I just want to say that I feel very similarly to Ms. Hughes-Scandy's on her reasoning. And in addition, I think that this, you know, this threshold of making of serious bodily injury or death, which might mean requiring transport in an ambulance, I think could also, it has the potential to deter people who have maybe disabilities or chronic medical issues from seeking the assistance that they need. So for that reason, and in addition to pretty much everything Ms. Hughes-Scandy said, I think I will vote no.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Tree. Mr. Bryson, do you want to speak for your...
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to speak in favor of the ordinance. While I very much am aware and sensitive to the needs, we would never want a person in Juneau who needed help to be concerned to call. I actually see this ordinance as being help to those very people that you're concerned for. The purpose of this, and listening to Lieutenant Weske, that when a property is starting to become a nuisance property, that the police get directly involved with the landlord. And the landlord has to begin taking steps and actions, and if a fine ever hands down, they have to have a corrective action plan. If somebody is being abused to the point where they're concerned about having their seventh or eighth or ninth call, the more people that get involved, the more likelihood that that victim is going to receive the help that they need. So your the fear of somebody not calling because they're going to get in trouble, I see it as they want landlord involvement could be potentially helping them, because if it's getting to the point of seven and eight calls, that victim is obviously not receiving the help that they need. So having the police have a more definitive reason to get directly involved with the ownership of the property is going to protect victims more, and it will protect the neighborhood more. So I see this as a way to reduce those very situations that Ms. Hughes-Scandy's is concerned about, because it requires more involvement. That's the whole purpose behind this ordinance. It requires landlords to be more responsible for their property. That means protecting the people that are there. I only see good coming from this, so I'm going to be in support of it.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson. Ms. Glashevsky.
May I make a motion?
Well, we have a motion on the floor.
I'd like to make an amendment to the motion. First of all, we've talked about this many times, and I share many of the same concerns that have been expressed, and I appreciate everybody reading it. The more people reading it, the more things we find, like right now. So I make it on page 3 of 11, line 19, number 5, I propose the amendment to delete the words "for serious bodily injury or death." Just, it would then read "a report of a medical emergency." There's no, if you have a medical emergency, you get to call. It doesn't have to be deemed serious. That's my amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Glashevsky. Any objection to the amendment? Okay. So if there's no objection to the amendment, then the amendment passes. So now we'll go back to the main motion. Mr. Edwardson.
May I ask the member who objected a question?
You can ask your question.
May I not give him an answer?
My question is, could you give, I kind of feel where you're coming from, could you give an example? Maybe.
Sort of my what I'm picturing or my worst case scenario.
Ms. Hughes-Candy's.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think I'm picturing, say, maybe an apartment building where there's a landlord who's got multiple tenants, and we pass this ordinance, and maybe there's somebody in their complex that is, you know, got a substance abuse, or there's something, they're getting, the cops are coming, they come one, they come two, they come three times. They're aware of that. As somebody who is a property owner, I can imagine that if, even though it is now being counted as a separate residence within that unit, I think the temptation would be too great. My fear is that if somebody else seems like a problem tenant, even if the, let's say the stalking example, the woman living there is a victim of somebody stalking her, or she's getting out of a domestic assault situation, it would possibly be easier for the landlord to just say, you're out. And how would CBJ or the cops even know about that? That somebody who's already in a vulnerable situation, they're not having the wherewithal, that's a basic, you know, Maslow's needs, they're in need of housing. I'm not sure that they would be in a good place to say, oh, I've been wrongfully evicted, or I know my renter's rights. I just see it as kind of taking some of the most vulnerable and putting them in a situation where there's these unintended consequences from what I agree from Mr. Bryson. There's plenty of situations where the landlord being involved would seem to be a benefit, or would be a benefit.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ms. Treem, then Ms. Hale, and Ms. Klaszewski.
So we're talking about landlords a lot in this conversation, but this ordinance doesn't apply just to rental housing. So, there's not always going to be a landlord involved. And so the point Mr. Bryson made of, you know, the landlord will step in and maybe abate some of these issues. Well, that's only true if it's a rental situation where there is a landlord. So I don't know that is a strong argument in favor of this ordinance. My notes.
We can come back to you as needed. Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I am writing my notes. It's my understanding that eviction of tenants is not a simple matter, and I just wondered if Mr. City Attorney might be able to provide us a little information on that. It's been my understanding that it's not simply a matter of a landlord saying, you're out. And I have one other thing that I'll wait until.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hale. Mr. Attorney.
Thank you. So I think there are probably 2 points on that. The first is the general kind of theme of the Landlord-Tenant Act, that tenants have rights under the Landlord-Tenant Act and they get to stay in their homes. Unless there's, and I'll just generalize it, some good cause shown for a landlord to be able to evict somebody. There's a list of kind of things that can happen. So, for example, if you don't pay your rent timely and you haven't cured that within a reasonable amount of time, or if you're not maintaining the property or your side of the property that you're supposed to maintain, those are kind of easy examples. They get far more nuanced. The other two pieces that the Assembly did sensitive to that topic was we amended this, I believe, in the Committee of the Whole, and I don't remember when, last year, to have two provisions that are important where we say that victims of crime are not nuisances and this ordinance shall not be construed as the basis of evicting a tenant solely because the tenant requested assistance as a victim of crime. So there are some protections in policy guidance in here to try to address that.
Can you just refresh my memory where you're
sure
where that is?
It's on page 1 of the ordinance at the very bottom. Packet page 59, lines 22-24-ish, and then similarly on page 4 of the ordinance, line 5-6, it says a tenant requesting assistance as a victim of crime, and that's under the exemption, so things that do not count for a chronic nuisance.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney.
One more.
Okay.
Thank you. And I just wonder, and if we have anyone from JPD here who might be able to address these questions that might have come up as they were drafting this and studying this as it applied in other communities would be willing to do that.
Lieutenant Weske, are you willing to come up?
Thank you.
Hello again.
What question do you have from, I have you down.
My specific question is the concern, the very valid concern that Ms. Hughes-Scandes has raised. I'm sure this has come up as you were drafting what you've provided and as you were studying the application of this kind of ordinance in other communities, and I'm just wondering what you've learned and if you have any words of wisdom to share with the Assembly on this topic.
Sure. Before I forget it, when we're talking about victims of domestic violence, not only do we have a piece in there to talk about victims not, you know, being the victim of a crime does not make you eligible for this, but we have another specific protection in there that says if this is a DV crime, it does not count. You could call for a domestic violence crime 2,000 times in 365 days, and you're not going to qualify for this ordinance. So I understand and appreciate the Assembly's concern about victims of domestic violence, but we've put protections in place to eliminate those calls so they will not count against anybody, because we would never want someone to not call. That counts for domestic violence. It counts for sexual assault. It counts for child abuse and neglect. All those things are off the table, because we would never want to jeopardize someone calling the police for that. This is for nuisances outside of those issues. As it pertains to other communities, when I talked to people who had implemented these types of ordinances in their communities, the theme was mostly that they've rarely ever had to use it, if at all. I talked to some communities that they never have once taken somebody, never fined somebody, never taken them to court, depending on their own system, because the fact that there is a chronic nuisance ordinance was enough to kind of keep people in check. And that obviously is the hope here. As the person who's going to be doing the paperwork for the chronic nuisance ordinance, I promise you that is my hope, that we never have to deal with one. One of them was from a college town, and so they didn't have, it was more for party houses, so I didn't get a lot of information on domestic violence. I talked to an agency out of Oregon. They had no issues. They hadn't had any problems like I've heard mentioned here. They hadn't had any challenges to the ordinance, so they felt it was pretty successful. Of course, I can't reach out to everybody that has one, but from who I talked to, I got good reviews from everybody that I spoke with.
Thank you, Lieutenant Weske. Ms. Gladyshevsky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So we went over this ordinance many times in the COW, and I and others expressed concern, just like Ms. Hughes-Scandes just did, regarding this ordinance. Because of those concerns, we amended it. And I understand Lieutenant Weske's comment that the people he talked to thought it was fine, but there are articles written, there are about possibilities of this making people that are housing insecure more insecure. And I would just give an example for the benefit of my colleague who asked the question. If you are, I know it says victims of domestic violence are exempt, you don't, but when you are in that situation, in a chaotic situation, you get coerced into doing all kinds of things. And I definitely can imagine a scenario where someone says to someone who's a victim of such activities, you better not call because we're going to lose our housing, you know. And so that's the concern. That's the concern. That was my concern from the beginning. And I think it's real. And I think that we've added at this point enough safeguards in this ordinance that I'm willing to support it. It still concerns me. I did send this to people who are in that community, and they didn't send it back with concerns. So at this point, I'm willing to let it go through if there's any indication that it's having the effects that we're concerned about. We would want to hear about it immediately. And if people providing services to that community, like AWARE, starts to hear that it's a problem, we should be back in here the next day. So at this point, I'll support it. We have worked on it a lot, and I'm still concerned, but on balance, I think I'll support it.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Glashevsky. So my order is Mr. Bryson, Mr. Edwardson, Mr. Smith, Ms. Hughes-Gaines, and Ms. Treem. So Mr. Bryson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Wilden. I'll try to be brief here. Just to clarify a point that Ms. Treem brought up, Ms. Hughes-Gaines' initial comment was about people being evicted or losing their property. That's where my point of a landlord wants to be aware of the problems that are communicating. I was not trying to generalize misstream the entire problem. It was just addressing Ms. Hughes-Gaines' one point there. I had stated that I didn't believe that our nuisance ordinance was strong enough. This is a tool for the police to help increase public safety in our community. And while I think this is a good tool that will hopefully have the exact results that Lieutenant Weske is hoping for, I could have seen it have a little bit more teeth. My understanding was that this ordinance was designed to deal with the worst properties in Juneau. So not the average, not the those aren't getting the multiple calls. It's the very worst problematic. And I think my one question for Lieutenant Weske was, how many properties in Juneau right now do you think might even fall or be close to being categorized as a nuisance property?
Lieutenant Weske.
When I was preparing this ordinance, I went back and looked at the preceding 3 years leading up to whenever I started this, which I think was probably 2017, so somewhere in the 16, 15, 14 range. Each year we had about, if I just took numbers without looking at the details of the call, because as you know, in order for it to qualify, it has to be probable cause. You know, some things could have gotten mislabeled as a disturbance when they were really a domestic violence situation. So this is as wide a net as I could cast, and I only got 17 homes each year, about 17 homes each year. So when you start to actually analyze each of those calls and each of those properties, that's going to dwindle drastically. If you just were to ask me anecdotally, I can think of 4 or 5 properties in the last four years that I know would have qualified. But those 4 or 5 properties they took a long time to reconcile. So that's kind of how we got to this point. But I think that the scope would be very limited in how many residents we touch or businesses we touch here.
Thank you. Follow-up, Madam Mayor?
Very quick follow-up. You have people that haven't spoke yet.
Will this ordinance make the community safer?
I believe it will. I believe it will make neighborhoods safer because they will feel like they have, they will feel like they have an option where a lot of neighborhoods don't feel that way right now.
All right. Thank you, Lieutenant Weske. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm still leaning on supporting this for a number of reasons, but I'm a lot more worried about it now. Ms. Gladyshevsky talked about the safeguards that we added in amendments, and I agree, with those safeguards, and I'm going back to read one that the city attorney just brought up, and that's what my question's about. However, victims of this is on page 1 of the draft ordinance at the bottom, starting on line 22. However, victims of crime are not nuisances, and this ordinance shall not be construed as a basis of evicting a tenant solely because the tenant required assistance as a victim of the crime. So that does mean that in combination with other things, the tenant can be evicted. And I'm just kind of wondering what those things would be. If somebody was on rent a year and a half ago, them calling, that wouldn't solely be on them calling. I mean, are we in any kind of danger of that?
Mr. Attorney.
So I don't believe so. That sentence was added to give JPD some direction as to how to interpret on page 4 the exemption that says a tenant requesting assistance as a victim of crime. So the vision on that, my understanding from the committee, the whole discussion was that if a tenant, let's say, for example, is repeatedly creating a bear attractant nuisance with garbage, then that would qualify as a nuisance activity. But if the tenant was requesting whatever type of assistance because of crime, whether or not that was related to some other nuisance activity, then that would fall into the exempted category.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, thank you for being patient.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good discussion. As I was doing research on this, and I also reached out to a number of more civil rights-based groups and didn't hear anything back, which I don't know if that means they're busy and understaffed or it maybe wasn't as big of a problem or that our ordinance hopefully maybe struck a good spot of balance between enforcement and protecting those that we should be protecting. I guess one concern I had and had read about was just potentially the weaponization of calls to properties. Looking at the bottom of page 2 of the ordinance package, page 60, law enforcement response means a police officer or enforcement agent responded to and charged or issued a warning based on probable cause of a nuisance activity. My question for Lieutenant Wesky is, if someone were to make a false report, or if someone were to call, I guess we know that a domestic violence or a victim of sexual assault, that call would not count. But I guess how, based with this definition, how are we ensuring that people can't weaponize this ordinance against against a property? I do see the report of false information, but I can imagine it's not as clear. Anyway, I can imagine there's some wiggle room there. So I guess if someone calls in and is weaponized and trying to use it as a tool and say then a situation escalates based on that call, would that then be a valid law enforcement response that would count towards the chronic nuisance count?
Kind of risky.
So I think you kind of have two things that you're asking about. One is if neighbor A is repeatedly calling on neighbor B, and neighbor A is so determined to get neighbor B kicked out that they start making false reports. That false report is a crime and would count against neighbor A, who's making that false report, if we could prove through probable cause, just like any other call, that that's a false report. Then they would be subject not only to the tally, but an actual criminal offense, which is probably more legitimate. The other scenario I think you're talking about is neighbor A calls a couple times, neighbor B says, that's enough of that, and then neighbor B retaliates against neighbor A for making false reports. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, or just that the response, when the police respond, sometimes things just happen, you know.
Yeah.
Now a confrontation. And
I mean, being annoyed at your neighbor is not a defense for committing another crime. So neighbor B still has to be careful of that. But also, if neighbor B doesn't do it 8 times in a year, they're going to be okay. So, you know, that if there's one time where they kind of lose their temper with neighbor A and a shouting match ensues, that's not going to tip the scale. So we have a protection in place for a neighbor who is making false reports, and while I see the scenario you're talking about, I don't foresee it as being something that gets somebody to the level of a chronic nuisance.
Lieutenant Wesky, I think his question is, neighbor A makes a false report to neighbor B is not real happy to see the police officers for whatever reason, a problem happens with the police officers and neighbor B gets arrested, how is that treated? Because it was initially a false report. Is that what you're asking? And now it's become an incident.
Yeah, you still can't do that. So, I mean, if this is recorded, yeah. Still don't fight with the police.
Sure. Madam Mayor, can I try one?
Okay, try one more little, time.
Maybe less words would be better. I guess I'm trying to see, is there some discretion and kind of reasonability with the police to say, to like note this as a chronic or a law enforcement response? The concerns about, you know, someone calling for domestic violence, or we know that doesn't count, but anyway, is there some discretion or kind of reasonability in, by a responding police officer?
Yes. While we've tried to take the vagueness out of the ordinance as it relates to the benefit of the tenant, there is still discretion for us to give that benefit to the tenant. So if that call is close, it doesn't have to count. So there is discretion for us there if we're just seeing a completely off the wall scenario with a neighbor that. And we just don't think that it counts. There is that discretion there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Ms. Hughes-Candies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'll be really brief. I just want to recognize the work of Lieutenant Wesky and Mr. Attorney. I do feel like we've looked at this a lot and we've asked a lot of questions, so I'd just like to recognize. I know we're all on the same page of wanting people to call the cops when they need the cops and wanting the community to be safer. In regards to eviction, all I will say is for all of renters' rights and for everything we've put in here, I have family who have lived in low-income housing. There is nothing that stops a landlord from saying, I'm going to put a note on everybody's door that says there's a new ordinance and don't call the cops, which, you know, that's probably criminal in some sense, or I don't know if it is or not. But that's, I just want to capture, I understand why other people support it, but to me the unintended consequences or the danger of that is just too great to when I weigh it on the scales of the potential benefit. But I do want the police to feel empowered, of course.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes-Candies. I don't think there's a question in there.
No.
Ms. Treem.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. She took the words right out of my mouth, but I was also going to say thank you, Lieutenant Wesky, for being here. This is like the fifth or sixth time you've come to us, and I really appreciate all of the work that you've done and all of the safeguards that we have put in here. I recognize those, and I appreciate those. But my concern also is not with how it would be applied by JPD. My concern is that, like Ms. Gladyszewski, you know, brought up earlier, that it could be used to manipulate people who are in a really vulnerable situation. And we've been talking about landlords in this conversation as if they're all good actors, and I don't think that that's always true. So that's where my concern lies, is that it will be used by people to manipulate and to harm people who are already very vulnerable. And I also think that when we're talking about the worst properties in Juneau, those properties have issues that are so great and are caused by things that are, you know, outside the purview of this ordinance, that I can see where this can be used as a tool for those properties. I don't think it's enough, and I don't think that the risks that come from this ordinance outweigh those potential gains. So, anyway, thank you again for being here.
Thank you, Ms. Treem. Mr. Smith, you were kind of waving, and then you weren't waving. Do you have another question?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I was actually where I had the question that came from Ms. Hughes-Scandy's point about it being, if it is illegal for a landlord to say, to threaten or do something about not calling the police, or I would imagine so, but.
Mr. Attorney.
I'm going to have to punt on that one, and if you need an answer, I will get you one at the next meeting.
Okay, we have a motion. We have an objection. Is everybody done talking? Okay, Madam Clerk, will you call roll? And the motion as amended.
So So for ordinance 2019-30 as amended, Mr. Bryson?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Ms. Hale?
Yes.
Ms. Hughes-Scandes?
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Treen?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mayor Weldon?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Madam Clerk, and thank you again, Ms. Lieutenant Weske, for all the work you've done with this, and Mr. Attorney.
Thank you all, and thank you for bearing with me, listening to me talk five times.
Thanks for coming again.
There you go. Thanks for putting up with us.
All right, well, we'll continue on. Item B, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2020-01. An ordinance amending Title 69 of the City and Borough Code by adopting the Uniform Alaska Remote Seller Sales Tax Code.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Attorney, Mr. Manager, sorry. Mr. Attorney.
In 2018, the United States Supreme Court decided South Dakota v. Wayfair, allowing governments to assess sales taxes on remote sales. On November 2019, CBJ joined the Alaska Remote Seller Sales Tax Commission, which is charged with developing and administering a Wayfair-compliant remote sales tax system. On January 6, 2020, the commission adopted the Uniform Alaska Remote Seller Sales Tax Code, which implements the collection of remote sales tax. Pursuant to its membership agreement with the Commission, the CBJ is required to adopt the Uniform Remote Sales Tax Code. While the CBJ's authority to assess, collect, and remit remote sales tax will be delegated to the Commission, the CBJ retains its authority to establish and modify local sales tax rates and exemptions. The Finance Committee reviewed this ordinance at its meeting on January 8th. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Is there any member of the public that wishes to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2020-01, an ordinance amending Title 69 of the City and Borough Code by adopting the Uniform Alaska Remote Seller Sales Tax Code, and ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, that motion passes. So we have several public testimony for the next couple, so I think we'll take a break till 8 o'clock.
We're live, we're local at 104.3 KTOO Juneau, and we've been listening to the live broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. The Assembly will be back again at about 8.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2020-05, an ordinance authorizing the manager to dispose of 8 lots in the Vintage Business Park located near 3041 Clinton Drive to Torrey Pines Development for fair market value.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
In August 2019, CBJ acquired 8 lots located in Vintage Business Park for $1.519 million. For the purpose of developing assisted living housing primarily for seniors. CBJ solicited proposals to develop the proposed housing, and Torrey Pines Development was determined to be the best and most qualified bidder. During negotiations, a proposal was made for Torrey Pines to purchase the 8 lots for fair market value for the construction and operation of 80 units of senior housing, assisted living, and memory care. Assembly Committee of the Whole heard the proposal on January 6, 2020, and recommended the manager proceed with negotiations for the sale. Later in your packet under unfinished business is a notice of recommendation from the Planning Commission, unfinished business item A. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. So there are several members of the public that wish to speak to this ordinance. So first we have Laura Lynn Swanson. And you'll have 3 minutes, so please state your name and area of town you live.
My name is Laurelyn Swanson. I live at 3101 Riverwood Drive in Juneau. I'm a former member of the Commission on Aging from 1997 to 2003. I was 2013, and I was off for several years in that time. I've worked on both senior surveys for 1998 and 2010. I'm the former manager of Fireweed Place Apartments for Seniors from September of 1993 to December 31st this year, after 26 years. I'm here tonight to ask you as an assembly to support all the hard work put forth by your Juneau Commission on Aging over the past 30 years, along with the Senior Citizen Support Services Incorporated and those seniors completing and returning the surveys. Yes, SCSSI stepped up to the plate in 1984 at the request of the City Assembly and the mayor to form a nonprofit group from the members of the Juneau Commission on Aging, which then built Fireweed Place, filling the need for senior housing. And SCSSI has now found the right group to move forward with Riverview Project. I ask that you please move forward to support Ordinance 2020-05 and Ordinance 2019-06Q so that Riverview Senior Community can proceed. There have been three surveys done by the JCOA, the Golden Resource Survey of 1989, resulting in the building of Fireweed Place by SCSSI, along with the CBJ's support to purchase the land on Willoughby Avenue and several other incentives. The 1998 Long Term Needs Survey, which resulted in the building of Wildflower Court, with again the CBJ's helping with land, and then the 2010 Juneau Senior Needs Survey. Incentives were given by the CBJ at these times for both of the first two projects. The CBJ needs to now show support with the new Riverview Senior Community granting the incentives needed to proceed. On the third survey, 2010, the Juneau Commission on Aging worked to garner from Juneau and Southeast community seniors who plan to stay or plan to move after retirement. The age groups follows along with the percentages of each group planning to stay in Juneau. 55 to 64, 79%. 65 to 74, 89%. 75 plus, 95%. And these figures were 10 years ago. It will be interesting to see what this new JCOA 2020 survey comparison shows. I also ask you all, if you have not yet read the 2010 Juneau Senior Needs Survey, please do prior to reading the 2020 Senior Survey, and above all, the comments from those completing the survey. They were sent to you in your packets today. Assisted living for those wishing to stay in Juneau. My husband Paul and I are now both retired. We wish to stay in Juneau like so many other retirees and strongly support and look forward to Riverview Senior Community. Please vote yes to support both ordinances, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Swanson? Thank you for your testimony. And then brings us to Sue Douglas.
Good evening. My name is Sue Douglas. I live at 3014 Foster Avenue in Juneau. And I hope you'll forgive me if I look at my notes a lot. I'm hoping this is the last time I'm going to come before you on this subject, and I don't want to miss saying anything. As we all know, we hope the passage of this ordinance and another one tonight will be the final action needed by the city and borough toward developing senior housing and assisted care for Juneau seniors. This has been an almost seven-year project for many of us, and one which you, the current assembly, has most helped to achieve. I want to personally thank each of you, Madam Mayor, assembly members, the manager, where are you? The manager, the attorney, chief housing officer. You've been remarkable, all of you, and I can't say enough on how grateful we are for your patience, for listening, for learning, for asking good questions, for a thorough vetting. Sometimes I got a little whiny and wanted you to hurry up, but the fact is you've done your job, and we're really, really proud of you for it. It's been a lot of work for all of you and a lot of other people, too, but certainly I think we're all going to feel it's been well worth it. So thank you for a responsible, thoughtful, and creative approach that I commend you all for, and your tolerance and your courtesy particularly is appreciated, as I and others were rather relentless and have kept after this for some time. And if I may take advantage here, I also want to publicly thank a whole lot of people out there and others who couldn't make it through the weather tonight who wanted to be here. We have had strong and incredible community support for this, and we're all deeply grateful. And I think it supports all your efforts, knowing how much the public has cared about this for a long, long time. So this assembly and staff have not only understood the need and the market demand for senior housing and care in Juneau, but you've reached more deeply to help solve the problem by creating some incentives to help developers make this big and expensive project become possible. What you've done is create a really, really good private and public partnership. One of the incentives relates to the ordinance that's before us right now. By CBJ purchasing the property at Vintage Park, you incentivized development by knocking off that immediate upfront cost to potential senior housing operators. But this ordinance assures that you are going to get that cost back at fair market value by an agreement with a development company to purchase it in a reasonable amount of time. And for that reason and many more, I urge you to pass this ordinance tonight, and it's a win-win for all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Douglas? Perfect timing. Thank you. All right, and that brings us to Don Gottschall. Please state your name. And
Don Gottschall. I live at 7400 North Douglas Highway, and I've been involved here. Laura Lynn told me 20 years, and we've been working on this the last seven, and you guys all know that. Gene Overstreet keeps asking me, when am I going to get it built? Bill Hudson had to take his wife to Colorado when she had Alzheimer's. Mike and Marilyn Miller couldn't make it in Juneau and both moved south and needed the care that we would be providing here. Fagerstrom's left town. The list goes on, and you guys are all aware of that. As an old hydropower economic evaluation engineer, I've looked at the stuff that we've prepared for SCSSI, and I've looked at what Torrey Pines is talking about, from everything from staffing to economic analysis, and looked at Torrey Pines and what you have done for the economic analysis here with the land purchase and so forth. I'm going to talk to both ordinances. And it's highly appreciated, and I like the economics of this. And I want to thank the Assembly, City Manager, and Housing people who with their dedication and skills, have got this project this far. We really appreciate you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Gottschall? Thank you. Can you fix that, Madam Clerk? Shut it off. Okay. Beth Curtula.
I see the note not to pull on the microphone now.
Okay, what's not starting out so well? All right, Madam Mayor, Assembly Members, City Staff, and everyone who has worked so hard on this, thank you. My name is Beth Curtula, and I live at 10601 Horizon Drive, around the corner from Ms. Gladyszewski. I grew up here. I'm a lawyer. I was really honored and lucky to serve in the state legislature representing Juneau for 15 years. And I'm here to support the two ordinances that support senior housing in Juneau, 2020-05 and 2019-06. In 2017, I brought my father, a lifelong Alaskan, home to Juneau.
if there had been assisted living, such as the one that's being proposed here, I think there is still a very good chance that he would still be walking and have a much higher quality of life. Even if not, it still would have been enormously easier. As it is, there was no available senior housing, and we had to remodel an apartment for him. 4 days before we were to come home, he fell and broke his hip. And after a very difficult 2 weeks in the hospital, we finally brought him home. And we were very, very lucky to be able to do that. And then we're very lucky to still have him here in his apartment with a wonderful doctor that does home care and with absolutely phenomenal caregivers. But I cannot even begin to tell you how difficult it has been and how expensive it's been. You know, some days I think I'm either incredibly stubborn or crazy or both. So to have to leave your beloved family member outside, and Mr. Gottschall just told you about some of the dear Alaskans that have had to be there, is just heartbreaking. But that's what's happening to a lot of people. Our Pioneer Home is absolutely remarkable, but not everyone can be in it. So for our economy, bringing, you know, $32 million plus dollars in, for the new jobs, 47 new jobs, many of them bringing new caregivers and new people to Juneau, for our culture, it's such a loss to lose our seniors, and for our families, you know, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank you for considering this and for your support of it. So let's keep our seniors home. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Cotrullo? You're good to go. Thank you.
I'm used to being on that side, so I forget. Thank you.
Everything tonight. Yep.
Oh, was that time?
Perfect. No, I'm just trying to reset it.
Now we have Emily Kane.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My name is Emily Kane. I live at 1880 Evergreen Avenue, and I'm currently on the Juneau Commission on Aging with my colleague Paul Douglas and several other lively seniors who are avid about keeping our seniors in Juneau. So it's really been a pleasure to serve on the commission. And there's not much I can add to what we've already heard, except I'd like to, besides encouraging you all to unanimously pass the ordinances 2020-05 and 2019-06Q, I think it is. One thing that excites me that hasn't been mentioned is that perhaps this will set a precedent to bake in considerations for accessibility and folks with disability as we proceed with more development in Juneau. I just was saying to Scott, as soon as this is built, we're going to need a couple of more. So as we successfully roll out considering senior needs and the needs of people with disabilities, because we don't want people to leave Juneau if they can't find accessible or available or affordable housing, that this will become part of the planning commission and maybe even the permitting process to consider the people who have different abilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Payne? Thank you. Hey, Jim Scholl.
I'm not going to pull on it.
Hello.
I did anyway. I have 3 minutes or 2 minutes.
You have 3 minutes. Start by stating your name and where you live.
Okay. Well, I wrote this for 2 minutes, and it's a good thing because I could prattle on. But anyway, my name is my name is Jim Scholl. Louder?
Aaron. Get closer to the
microphone. Okay. My name is Jim Scholl. I live at 3640 Greenwood Avenue here in Juneau. It's in Salmon Creek. I've been on the board of Senior Citizen Support Services for the last few years, And I want to thank you for helping us and Juneau seniors. By the year 2022, we estimate that Juneau will need an additional 117 assisted living beds over those provided by the Pioneer Home. And that's part of the housing and demand study that we did that you all partially funded. And again, thank you for that. Even though the number of persons over 65 is expected to decline after 2032, the number over age 80, and especially over 85, continues to increase. These are the folks that we need the facility the most, that may need the facility the most. As a board member, I was on the location committee, along with Don Gottschall, to find a suitable location. We spent a year, and we determined the Vintage Park location is the best for many reasons. One of the most important reasons is it's flat. Mobility is extremely important for seniors, for the well-being and longevity of seniors. The facility has a sidewalk in front, and it provides the opportunity to walk to the store, get a cup of coffee, read the paper, etc. Mobility is easy. The river walk in the back offers residents the opportunity just to walk and listen to the river. I urge you to pass both of these ordinances in front of you tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Scholl? Thank you. Then we have Kathleen Strasberg.
Kathleen Strasbaugh, Fireweed Place. I'm a former member of the former SCSSI. I wasn't in at the beginning, but I have been involved since about 2014 or 15. First, I want to join with others in thanking all of you for all the work you've done in this, staff and elected officials, particularly those who went through the rather grueling process with SCSSI testing and pouring over the financial and other planning issues. I think that information was very helpful to make this process more well-informed. I just wanted to add a couple of things to what's already been said. There has been some concern expressed throughout the debate about the CBJ walking into this participation in the erection of a facility that's going to be owned and managed by someone else. But I have to encourage you to remember that it is the construction that has based a great deal on CBJ's own needs and special cost concerns that has been the impediment all along. We will always be able to find operators and so on, but the passage of these ordinances will bring us to the first and the most important step in getting this off the ground. There's no question about the economics of the operation, but what CBJ is doing now is giving that one extra push to actually make it happen, and it's doing so in a manner that's not unduly costly compared to building the building itself. I would encourage you to be not afraid. It's very doable, and it's the most important thing you can do to contribute to this effort. And we really appreciate that you have that under consideration this evening. I'd also like to urge you and thank you for doing so, but and point out though that the costs have already increased, and there's no time like the present to get this done. And then finally, I do appreciate CBJ's efforts in general to try to meet some of the public needs that the state is now not able to. And it harks back to an earlier time when counties in the Midwest and the state of Alaska itself, when it first created the Pioneer Home, supporting seniors and its consideration of child care and its effect on the economy and the education of young children. All these things are things that we have to nourish and support, even if the city isn't operating them. I really appreciate all your efforts, and this is one part of that effort.
Thank you. Any question for Mrs. Strassbaugh? All right, thank you. Any further testimony on this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Hughes-Candy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2020-5 and ask unanimous consent.
Any objection? Seeing and hearing none, that ordinance passes. That moves us to Item D. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2019-06-Q, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $2 million as funding for the Assembly's Senior Assisted Living Grant, funding provided by the General Fund's fund balance and the Juneau Affordable Housing Fund's fund balance.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
Torrey Pines Development requests a $2 million grant to assist with overall construction costs to help attract equity capital and to ensure that rental rates for seniors remain low for potential residents. The grant would assist the overall viability of the project. Without the grant, it is estimated that in order to meet financial projections, room rental rates would be 20 to 25% higher than indicated in the proposal. If this happened, the rates would be too high for most prospective tenants and development of the project would not proceed. Staff recommends that the source of the $2 million grant be split between general fund dollars and the Juneau Affordable Housing Fund, with $1.6 million from the general fund and $400,000 from the Affordable Housing Fund to support 8 Medicaid-eligible beds. At its January 8, 2020 meeting, the Assembly Finance Committee approved this action. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. We'll go back to the public. Several of you have written down both these ordinances, so I'll call your name, and if you feel like you've spoken to it already, please feel free not to speak tonight. You'll have 3 minutes again. So the first one I have in my list to speak to 06 is Sue Douglas.
Sue Douglas, 3014 Foster Avenue, Juneau. Thank you again for an opportunity to speak on yet again another important ordinance. This ordinance authorizes the appropriation of $2 million as a grant to assist the high cost of senior housing and care development costs. As with the entire process, you, the Assembly, and CBJ staff have carefully analyzed this proposed funding, which was part of Torrey Pines' response to the bid and proposal request for the development and operation of a senior assisted living housing and care community. This grant is essential to the success of the project. Torrey Pines had to find ways for this project to literally pencil out. It hasn't been easy, as two other potential developers learned and then ultimately left and went elsewhere. Torrey Pines looked for ways to reduce their equity investment requirement, which they explained in clear language and in a graphic chart in their RFP response. This grant will reduce the overall equity investment from approximately $11,130,000 to $9,130,000, which gets the numbers where they need to be for this to work for Torrey Pines to do it. Thus, for a project just short of $32 million, Torrey Pines has a senior lender for funding at 65%, equity investors at 28.7%, and now the city and borough with a grant at 6.3%. I mention these details because I hope you remember what CBJ is getting back and creating for the community with its low investment. Again, it's an appropriate public-private partnership where about 50 or more new jobs are created, local architects, contractors, and craftsmen will be employed, commerce will be created due to local purchase for food and supplies once the community is up and running, and as seniors move from their own homes or their current residences into Riverview, more housing is going to become available. CBJ incentivizes much-needed private development without the responsibility or cost to maintain or operate the senior community. With passage of this ordinance, we can move on. Your final action will give the green light tomorrow for Torrey Pines to quickly get to work so construction can start this upcoming season. Timing is of the essence, which you've heard me say a lot. So what a blessing it will be when Riverview Senior Community is available, thus avoiding losing more of our seniors to places outside that can house and care for them. Thank you all again for all you've done thus far, and I urge you to adopt this particular ordinance.
Thanks, Ms. Douglas. Is there any questions? Thank you. Don Gottschall?
Sue summarized it fine.
Beth Cretula? Emily Kane?
Emily Kane, 1880 Evergreen Avenue. Just doing a little quick calculation, I see that if each unit of the 88 units spent $22,000 in a year, that CBJ would recoup their $2 million. So those seniors that don't leave, they'll be here, and they could spend $22,000 in a year. So it won't take long to recoup this excellent investment.
Any questions for Ms. Kane before she runs off? Thank you. Jim Scholl?
I think Sue and Emily said it all.
Kathleen? Okay, anybody else want to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Treem?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2019-06Q and ask unanimous consent.
Ms. Glaszewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have an amendment to propose. Pass it out. This is just to add one sentence. So it's on page 114 of 125 is the ordinance. It adds one sentence to the appropriation section. This is just to make sure that after that the manager works out some sort of a funding agreement so that after X happens, you need more, then they'll get Y amount of money. So the sentence just says a grantor, same first sentence that was there before, and the second sentence would be a grantor grantee agreement is required, which shall be approved by the Assembly before disbursement of funds, just so we'll have a chance to look at it. And that's all. It's just a part of our fiduciary duties to make sure that how this is dispersed.
All right, thank you, Ms. Glaszewski. Ms. Treem and then Ms. Hale.
Can you just, repeat which packet?
Page 114 is where the ordinance is. And it's section 2. And it would add a sentence to the first sentence would remain the same, and the second sentence would be the one added, which for the people who don't have it in front of them, the sentence is, a grantor/grantee agreement is required, which shall be approved by the Assembly before disbursement of any funds. It's just for the manager to work out with the, so that it's not just they get $2 million and I don't know. If when X happens, they'll get X amount of dollars. When Y happens, they'll get Z amount of dollars. So that's all.
Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I wonder if Ms. Douglas with SCSSI might be able to speak to whether this might pose a problem or...
Unfortunately, public testimony is done.
I'm asking if, so I can't ask somebody to come speak to it?
We could, Mr. Manager.
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, this is the exact conversation that we've been having with Torrey Pines, is that if the Assembly awarded the grant, that we would link disbursement of the grant funds to some schedule of values in the construction process. That makes sense to them, and they're expecting this.
Thank you, Mr.
So the added step is you're going to get it back and be able to do your duty.
I would move that sentence, the addition of that sentence.
All righty. There's amendment on the floor. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the objection passes. The amendment, I'm sorry. It's getting late. The amendment passes. There is a motion on the floor. Any objections? Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I don't know how I'm going to vote yet. I am still bothered by the $400,000 from the General Affordable Housing Fund. It doesn't say in the ordinance that it covers the 8 Medicaid beds. I can't believe that an 80-bed assisted living facility wouldn't have many, many more Medicaid persons. We as an assembly have not yet approved the formula for the housing fund. We haven't agreed that $50,000 a unit is what we want to provide. And we could probably afford to subsidize lots of people just by giving them an individual grant, a lot more than the $50,000. So, and I know I lost my vote at the Finance Committee. I'm not sure I want to lose again tonight, but I really do object. It's too bad that we haven't come up with a formula. Too bad we haven't spent the housing fund money already. It's too bad that we seem to have artificially found $400,000 for this project when we could easily use fund balance and leave that money there for other housing. It just galls me that we got the funds through the 1%. We've got a housing officer, and we haven't bothered to use any of the money yet. And we just seem to have picked this project to spend a good part of the money. I don't think there's only $1.5 million there. I mean, we're spending 30%. 35% of housing money when we could easily afford to do this all with fund balance. I'm going to object, and I guess I will try to make an amendment. And I would like to make an amendment that the $400,000 from affordable housing fund balance be stricken, and that the general fund balance be raised to $2 million.
Mr. Attorney.
So just as a point of advisement, if that happens, then we would have to reintroduce this because the fund source is in the title.
I withdraw my
motion. Okay. Ms. Treen.
We can just make it say zero and then make the other one say $2 million. Sorry. Since it's in the title, we could leave the housing fund in there and just make it say zero. Is that
Mr. Attorney?
You would need to appropriate at least a dollar if you want to reduce that number.
Mr. Jones?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor. We're boxing ourselves in and spending money we don't need to spend from a fund that we should be spending a lot more stuff and getting nothing. So, but I will withdraw my objection.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Bryson, do you have an objection?
I was going to offer a solution for Mr. Jones' amendment. Never mind. I did have a question for the attorney or for Mr. Manager.
Okay.
What was the outcome of the potential of loaning money instead of granting money, a low-interest loan?
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, there was information in the packet on Thursday night at the special meeting with Dockton Harbor. So there was a memo and a spreadsheet. And I think the answer is you could. It would tie up money for a period of time. And my advice is that the developer and the banks are telling you that that's a risky loan, which is not our normal course of business.
Follow up? All right. So we'll go back to the motion as amended. At this time, I have no objections. Are there any objections? He withdrew his objection. Seeing and hearing none, the ordinance passes. thank you all for all your work you have done with these two. We've been requested to take a break, so we'll take a 10-minute break.
Tower above the earth, there is a view that reaches far, where we see the universe. I see the fire, I see. Thank you.
Seeing their names, they shake the flag, waking the earth, it lifts and lags. We see a thousand rooms to rest, helping us taste the bite of death. I know my time is past. I'm not so young, I'm not so fast. I tremble with the nervous thought.
And we're moving on to item E, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2019-06-R, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $1 million as funding for the Recycle Works Consolidated Facility Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by the Waste Management Fund's fund balance.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
CBJ Engineering estimates an additional $1 million is necessary to complete the construction of the Recycle Works Consolidated Facility. It is anticipated that the eventual sale of the existing household hazardous waste building on Shawn Drive will more than cover this cost. However, the sale of that building will not be complete prior to when funds are needed to award a construction contract. This ordinance would transfer the necessary amount from the Waste Management Fund's fund balance, which will later receive the proceeds from the HHW building sale. This ordinance was reviewed at the January 15, 2020 Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any member of the public wish to speak to this ordinance? Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the assembly. Let's see, we are on Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move ordinance 2019-06-R and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, that ordinance is approved. That brings us to unfinished business. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Planning Commission notice of recommendation to dispose of CBJ property to Torrey Pines Development for Senior Assisted Living.
All right. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, with adoption of Ordinance 2020-05, no action is necessary on this topic. Thank you.
Perfect. Okay, that brings us to new business. And who's covering that? Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, we have a hardship late filed real property tax exemption. Packet page 124 is the submitted information. We're looking for the assembly to consider a motion to authorize the assessor to accept the application as if it had been filed timely.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Manager. Madam Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move that the assembly ask the tax office to accept the hardship application as if it were filed timely.
Any objections?
And can I just ask a quick question? Information in here suggests that the hardship application does not clearly state that it must be submitted annually. It just asks that you check those instructions on there if it can be made any clearer. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So, and there are any objections? I don't believe there are any, so that request is completed. Moving on to staff reports, item A. Mr. Attorney, how's this one?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 2019-37 is the non-conforming ordinance that has worked its way through the Planning Commission and has gone through one committee of the whole. I was unable to get that ordinance ready for your introduction tonight. I'm conducting a final legal review, but I will have it ready for it at the next assembly meeting.
All right, thank you. Any questions on this before we move? Mr. Bryson.
I know that we've been discussing this. I had a concern from real estate that this may not solve all the issues of being able to either rebuild property or to completely be able to sell every piece of property And my understanding is that we were trying to do a non-conforming development code so that we could satisfy insurance and houses' abilities to be sold. Maybe we have, are we on the right track? Would this prevent houses from being, like if a house burns all the way to the ground and it might not be able to get rebuilt or prevent a house from being sold or being or traditionally financed?
Mr. Attorney.
Sure. So thank you. The intent of this ordinance is to make it easier in situations that are outlined in the ordinance. I think the director for community development would be more than happy to work with you through one-on-one if you have specific questions. That is the overarching goal.
I'm sorry, there was a very specific situation that I was concerned about. If a house burnt down or burnt past 75%, and it was a non-conforming, will this new rule allow a person to rebuild their home? Because they already went through the most catastrophic event of their life, and now the city's going to come in and say, nope, now you can't build that home in its design. That would be the concern I'd want to get addressed.
So that's the intent. There are some nuances. I think checking in with the director of community development would probably be the easiest to go.
Thanks, sir.
Ms. McClain, do you want to? Okay.
No.
Or would you work with Mr. Bryson to figure out his? Okay, thank you. Ms. McClain nodded yes. All right. Any further questions on this? Okay, thank you, Mr. Attorney. Okay, item B. Who's taking this one? Mr. Attorney.
Thank you. So, at the last assembly meeting, the assembly appropriated $250,000 for the abatement of the River Road property, which we're in litigation with. I want to give you an update because things have changed a little bit on that. After the assembly appropriated that money, there was a flurry of motions, kind of injunction type, filed by the property owner, and there was a hearing held with the judge in this case. And although it wasn't explicitly ruled on by the judge suggested that if the city had the ability to delay the contract for abatement until March 11th to give the court the opportunity to review any motions and to give Mr. Lawson Young the opportunity to try to have one last shot to clean his property, that might be the best interest that was inferred. We were able to reach a stipulation with Mr. Lawson Young that was signed off by the court in which Mr. Lawson Young will pay for all the bid preparation costs that the city incurred in that and for the two bidders who bid to the order of approximately $15,000, which there is now money in a trust account for, and that there's a series of other terms and conditions that was ordered by the judge. So the contract has been canceled for now, where Mr. Lawson Young has until March 11th to have his property cleaned up. And I'm sure we will be going through and dealing with this slew of motions that have come in.
All right, Mr. Jones?
Thank you. At the last meeting, one of the reasons for us cleaning it up and for us having a contract is that the contractor would have been required to remove the vehicles from the city and borough gym. The idea being that if the current owner cleans up his property, he may be taking it to either some other property, towing them out onto the street as abandoned vehicles. Are we able to, if he meets the stipulations by March 11th, are we able to determine legally how and where he disposed of those so that we know they didn't become another nuisance property or they weren't out on the street, they weren't being taken to our recycle place. I mean, there was some real positive reasons for us cleaning it up.
Yes.
One of which was to void those other two.
Sure.
I want to know, are we assured that we are still avoiding that?
Yes.
Mr. Attorney.
So there are two things that are relevant on that. Mr. Lawson Young agreed to a condition that he has to remove all the vehicles, but that if he intends to remove them to other vehicles, or excuse me, to other property within the borough, we have to consent to it first. And the second item is that Mr. Lossell Young is able to take his vehicles to the vendor that also has our junk vehicle program, so Skookum, but he is not eligible because he's a commercial entity to use the junk vehicle program, so he has to pay fair market value if he takes his cars there.
Follow up?
Yes, Mr. Jones.
So by any other property, we have to approve it, so he can't just dump them on the street.
Correct.
That's part of the same stipulation as if he moved it to a different lot, if he just stereotypically at night dropped them in the airport parking lot and left them.
Correct.
We know.
Correct.
Okay. I hope.
Any further questions for Mr. Attorney? And hearing none, we'll move on to item C. Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, in your packet, page 125 at the very end, there's a memo from Mr. Schaaf, Parks and Rec Director, to myself about the Whittier Street parking lot. We're switching up the direction here. So we had come to the Assembly asking for a motion to work with the Alaska Heritage Institute to lease the parking lot. On further inspection, that probably is too rigid of a method. So we're changing to a parking permit approach that will allow us to more flexibly manage parking and do some other uses. SHI is aware of the change, and they don't have any issue with it. So we just want to let you know that we're going a different direction than we told you before. More flexible and easier to implement.
All right, Ms. Hughes-Candies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, so I wasn't entirely clear from looking at this. Is it that same space that you're going to be doing a permit to? The permits are only for that space?
Mr. Manager.
Through the mayor, it's the same lot, but we may flex it depending on need. Maybe there might be some garage passes in either Marine Park Garage or DTC Garage. So it'll be the same number of spaces, and it'll be mostly at the Whittier lot.
Can I have a
brief follow-up?
Okay.
Before, when we talked about the plowing costs and some of the other costs that would go with that lot, SCHI would be taking care of it. With this new permit system, are they no longer on the hook for any of those costs?
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, so in this case, we would be the ones doing that. But I think in the end, the net economic effect to all parties is the same.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
A couple questions. The first one is, how's that lot managed now? Is that open for anybody to park? Is there you suggest in here there might be a two-hour free parking? I mean, can people park there all day long today? Is it rented out to the state? Is it required? I mean, can I go down there and park at 8 o'clock in the morning and leave my car there all day while I'm over at
Southeast conference
without putting my Assembly pass up there and not get a ticket?
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, the lot is currently not enforced. So it is a free-for-all right now. And it probably likely includes mostly state employees who are not using other spaces that the state is renting.
Mr. Jones.
Follow up then. So if you sign it, if you assign half the spaces to a permit and the other half are two-hour free parking, you know, without putting numbers down where somebody has to park at number one or number 10 or whatever, how are you going to enforce the 2 hour? Is that going to be an extension of a contract or bootlegger? Are we going to have issues like we have at the airport of our staff being down there called Nazis or whatever?
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, so the enforcement of the 2 hour would be an extension of the contract to bootlegger. We would not be doing that with staff. And then the permit area would be signed as permit area, and the users would have permits for their windows.
I'll raise my hand out and get to myself. So, Mr. Manager, just what you last said, so part of it will be permit area and part of it will be 2 hour. It won't be mixed in between.
Correct, once we get rid of some snow.
Any more questions? Oh, Mr. Jones.
Maybe this is implementation, but how are you going to demarket? Are you going to number the spots you're going to? How are you going to do that, especially with a ton of snow on the ground?
Mr. Mayor?
Madam Mayor, I think we're essentially waiting for the snow to be hauled away. But fairly simple, posts and chains and space numbers like we used to have across the Egan Drive, the subport lot. Non-permanent signage.
All right, any more questions? Okay. Do I have to separate you two? Okay. Any more staff reports? Okay, that brings us to the assembly reports. So, first of all, the mayor's report. First thing I want to talk about is there was some concern about our meeting with the governor, so I'm going to give everybody a little history on what happened. So the governor's office reached out to us to talk to the mayor, assembly, police chief, and anybody else that we wanted to bring. When the governor's office was advised that was be a public meeting, they said that's not quite what they wanted. They wanted to know more about what Jenna was all about and how some of his cuts affected the city. So we countered with, okay, how about we'll come to your office and we'll bring the mayor and some staff, and the deputy mayor agreed to come, and they said that would be great. In the meantime, public notice was sent out. So in your red folder, you'll find our talking points. And that can be released now because we noticed it. So what I have learned from this in error, when we canceled our public meeting, we should have said what we were doing instead. I figured that out. And the other thing which we should have done, because it's different than me just going up to talk to the legislature, was to notify the assembly that we were going to the governor's office. Although, be advised, I still couldn't have given you an agenda because it wouldn't have been noticed. So I apologize for my mistakes, and I will work to fix those, and we'll try to communicate better with everybody. And we have requested a town hall meeting also in Jenna, like he is doing in Petersburg and Wrangell. So I'm free to answer any questions on that before I start my lengthy mayor's report. Seeing and hearing none. We all met with our legislators and lobbyists for breakfast, so thank you all for coming, and thank you for the breakfast, Madam Clerks. We've also been busy doing a joint hospital board meeting, and I think that went very well and answered lots of questions. A huge thank you to the community for our 35th annual legislative reception. It was very well attended. And special thanks to the Alaska Committee. The clerks did an outstanding job. The Chamber of Commerce, Travel Geno, and the business community, any other community that donated. But again, a huge thanks to the community for showing up, because we saw lots of people there. So, in fact, they ran out of food. So, I also attended with Ms. Hughes Scandies the Canada Alaska Friendship Reception. That was kind of fun. I get to be called Her Worship. I like that. And I would remain mayor forever if I got to entertain second graders in the chamber all the time. I'll pass these cards out. These are their questions, but pay attention to this particular picture. There's me, and then there's paperwork twice as tall as me, and that's what my life is like. But anyway, just a couple examples. When do you start working? Do you get lunch breaks? Do you want to be mayor your whole life? Are you friends with any parents? So pass those down. They're kind of fun. Ms. Dream.
Can you invite us to those kinds of events?
Okay. Those kind of events, so. And anyway, we brought them up, and we made them be the assembly. And Ms. Elfers was kind enough to be our staff, and their question was, should cats be licensed like dogs? And it was a tight thing, and the cats were not licensed by a vote of 5-4. So anyway, I got to talk to on Action Line like some of you guys did. I attended Alaska Committee annual meeting. Congratulations to Greg Smith, who is a new board member of that committee. Regrettably, we said goodbye to Tom Cashin. He's a great friend of labor, and specifically to IBEW. And we also had a joint docks and harbors meeting. I attended very briefly, but it was packed, the Project Homeless Connect. So thank you for Mr. Chambor and his group for putting that together. I got to speak at ROAR, Reclaim, Own, and Renew Women's Conference, and that's their ninth annual, and I saw Ms. Hale there. I spoke at Alaska Fire Chiefs Association this morning, and they're here till Thursday, I believe. And just a couple upcoming events. Southeast Conference starts tomorrow till Wednesday. And also, if you didn't know, there's Employee Recognition Day Friday noon at JPD for any of those who want to attend. So that is my lengthy report. We'll go on to our committee chairs, and we will start with Human Resources. Mr. Bryson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Human Resource Committee meeting tonight, we had some reappointments for the Juneau Commission on Aging. Emily Kane was reappointed, a term beginning immediately, ending 12/31/21. Paul Douglas reappointed, beginning immediately, till 12/31/21. Susan Warner reappointed, beginning immediately, till 12/31/21. The new appointments: Jennifer Carson, term beginning immediately, ending December 31st, 2020, and Kathleen Somelin, with a term beginning immediately and ending December 31st, 2021.
On the Do we have board? Any objections to any of those appointments? Seeing and hearing none, consider them appointed.
For the Board of the Building Code Advisory Committee, Patrick Gorman was reappointed, term beginning immediately, ending 11/30/2022.
Any objection to that appointment? Seeing and hearing none, he's appointed.
And Paul Nolan, for the Board of Equalization, Paul Nolan was reappointed, term beginning immediately and ending 12/31/21. And Ken Solomon Gross, reappointing to a term beginning immediately and ending 12/31/2021.
Any objections to either of those appointments? Seeing and hearing none, they're appointed.
And the last action for the Human Resource Committee tonight is we forwarded Juno Sustainable Recognition Program that we'll see at the Committee of the Whole that will recognize and reward Juno businesses for taking sustainable actions in the community. And we're working on the details for that right now. That concludes Human Resource Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson, and I know you've been working on that award, so that's good that it's done. All right, we will move to lands. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Lands Committee met January 6, 2020. On the agenda was an easement for the Twilight Cafe. I don't know how deeply you want to go into it, but it's been a long-standing problem. Hopefully there's a solution to it. Proposed Aurora Arms condominium land trade to provide right-of-way access. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute requests the lease parking, which we just learned today that it's been amended. Staff reports, we actually bumped a discussion on extending the fire service area. We all received emails earlier this year about the proposal, or somebody wants us to propose extending the fire service area. We hope to have that on February 10th. February 10th is getting filled with required stuff, so we might have to bump some informational stuff. And we had a update on the Peterson Hill land sale update. An update on the Peterson Hill land sale. It's from the Office of Redundancy Office. So that's the land committee. We meet again next Monday, right before the count.
All right, thank you. Mr. Edwardson, Public Works, Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Public Works Committee, Public Works and Facilities Committee met on the 15th of January. Thank you, everybody, for postponing that by a week or two. We talked about SCADA. It was going to be an alternative procurement. SCADA is its computer-assisted operation of the wastewater plant. It doesn't have to be alternative procurement, it turns out. So that's kind of a nice realization. but we talked a lot about it possibly being alternative procurement. Had an update on the Lono grant, or one of the Lono grant buses, which is due in about July, but I think this was an update on the second grant. Talked about the CIP schedule, which you all should have seen by now, and we meet again on the 10th of February at noon.
Perfect. Thank you, Ms. Hale. Committee of the Whole, Ms. Glaszewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. There has not been a Committee of the Whole meeting since we last met as an assembly. The next one will be on February 10th.
Be a busy day, February 10th. Okay, Mr. Jones, Finance.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Finance Committee has not met since our last assembly meeting. However, we are meeting Wednesday night this week. You should all have the packet either in your box upstairs or in front of you. It's fairly lengthy. Mr. Edwardson will be on the phone, and Ms. Stream will be here until roughly the time she needs to leave to catch a plane. And the Joint Facilities Committee with the school district is scheduled to meet on February 16th at 8:15 in room 224.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Eagle Crest Summer Operations, Ms. Glaszewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The next meeting of the Eagle Crest Task Force will be March 5th. We were going to have a meeting this Thursday, but the manager and the Eagle Crest manager are working on the feasibility RFP, that, and so we'll hear more about that on March 5th.
Thank you. And the Visitor Industry Task Force, you've been busy, Ms. Dream.
Yes, Madam Mayor, we have been very busy. We met on the 16th, and we got a presentation from the city attorney. I don't know, I assume you guys all have access or are given our packet materials, but if you haven't read that one, it's an excellent memo that you should all read. And if anybody else wants to read that memo, it is online, although I have been informed that the Visitor Industry Task Force website is briefly down, so wait until tomorrow to go look for it. And then we met this past Saturday. We had a continuation of our public comment period, and then we began discussions on our charging questions. We had a very productive meeting, very long but very productive, and we will meet again on February 18th at noon.
Thank you, Ms. Green. And two public testimony.
What?
And two public testimony.
Oh, were those in there too? It's all been a blur. Yes, we've had two public testimony meetings. Did reschedule one due to the wind, because I don't think anybody should risk life or limb to participate in the public process. I really appreciate, I think we had maybe about 50 people total come and testify, and they all gave really great comments with really, you know, useful and good suggestions. So, again, thank you to everybody who came and testified.
All right, Mr. Jones.
Just a question. I had a question raised to me about when the public comments, either written or orally, will be available. Person went out online to the industry task force, and the last minutes were November 5th that were published. I told that person that the last session was just on Saturday, so I doubted those would be ready, but was pointed out that in the public comments where people can get to, the last published minutes are in November.
We're working on minutes on how those will go, but the public comments themselves that people have submitted, those are all available on the website, although again, right now, this minute, the website is not functional, but should be tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning, our webmaster, through the mayor, our webmaster has that as first thing on his tasks in the morning when he arrives at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, moving down to assembly liaison reports and comments. Mr. Bryson.
I attended the Homeless Connect event, met all kinds of great people and saw the resources that were going. Went to the Chamber of Commerce event where Governor Dunleavy spoke. I attended the JCOS retreat, or at least the first half of their retreat. On Saturday, I went to the Best Bit Task Force meeting ever. And I got to go visit my mom and dad in Nashville for a weekend. Thanks for letting me get out of town. That is my report, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. From my planning, the most recent Planning Commission meeting on the 28th, it went to 11:45 p.m. They approved a private shared access ordinance and the conditional use permit for the Archipelago lot. Their meeting tomorrow is a special meeting because they had to continue from last Tuesday to take action on a variance requesting parking going to zero for that property. As you mentioned, I was selected as a board of the member of the Alaska Committee, so that was very exciting to work with folks who are working to enhance and secure Juneau as Alaska's capital city. I helped do some intake at the Project Homeless Connect. Really neat to see all the different providers and folks out there serving some of our neighbors in need, and just very eye-opening to see some of the situations that some of our neighbors are in. And then I was also lucky enough to volunteer at the reentry simulation that some of us attended in the past fall, but this time be on the other side of things. So I think it was helpful for people to see the just the process and things people have to go through as they're trying to reenter and improve their lives after incarceration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Ms. Hughes-Candies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I met with the Juneau Commission on Sustainability January 8th and January 18th. They had their retreat. Congrats to Gretchen and Julie and Christine, who are the newest slate of officers, and thanks to the former outgoing officers who are still on the commission. We had a work session on the 22nd of January, and they were basically working on situating their goals for the upcoming year around the assembly goals, which I think is a smart approach. Docks and Harbor met, as you said, on January 30th with a joint meeting. We met directly prior to that for a normal meeting and discussed many of the same issues that we covered in our joint meeting. Really briefly, on the 17th of January, I got to speak at Luna Fest. That was well attended. That was a pleasure. I attended the legislative welcome reception. I got the opportunity to judge Juneau's Got Talent February 1st, and I can now confirm that Juneau does have talent. I got to speak with Pete Caron on Action Line. That's always a pleasure. I attended Project Connect, and this afternoon I got to attend the Native Affairs Forum, which was eye-opening. That is my report.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes-Candies. Ms. Trim.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Been to a number of board retreats since our last meeting. The Chamber of Commerce had their board retreat on the 14th, and Madam Mayor was there as well. They were very interested in discussing Centennial Hall, and then we got a neat little update from Bill Legere on a project to get cameras hardwired throughout the Capitol, which I think is really neat. And the Travel Juneau, both the Chamber of Commerce and the Travel Juneau Board are very interested in the work of the Visitor Industry Task Force. The Aquatics Board has been very busy. They met on both the 21st and the 28th to discuss and approve their budget. Because of an expedited budget timeline, they weren't able to discuss the commercial use regulations that they were going to discuss as planned during their January meeting, so those will be taken up in February. Much of their discussion around the budget was about how the scheduled temporary closure of the downtown pool will affect the budget, and they also have a desire to have the budgets for the two pools consolidated, and I think they're working with staff on that. And that is my report.
Thank you, Ms. Train. Ms. Hale.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I missed the Downtown Business Association meeting on the 14th simply because I was not paying attention. But there will be a meeting tomorrow, and I'll be there. Juneau Commission on Aging, there's a lot of concern in the community on what's going on with the caravan program because there's a change with the new contract. And so I've spoken with the Public Works Director, and we're going to have an update on that, as I said, at our Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting on the 10th. February is the deadline for the senior survey. They have JCOA has a senior survey subcommittee, and they have been cranking. They have been combing the community, getting everywhere, trying to get people to fill out that survey, really trying to look at the parts of the population, like, you know, slicing and dicing data and saying, are we missing this group? Are we missing that group? So just really tackling it and doing a great job. And JEDC also does a great job supporting them. The mayor was kind enough to ask me to speak at the Martin Luther King Day celebration, and I did, and that was really, really a wonderful, wonderful celebration. I'd attended before, but obviously hadn't spoken. Just a total off-the-wall thing with the city manager's mother. I did a bullet journal training 101, bullet journal 101 at the Mendenhall Library, and we had 41 participants. So if you ever want to know about bullet journaling, I'm your person. Bartlett board meeting, a lot going on, but I'll just touch on a couple things. There have been 3 responses to the provider network RFP, which used to be called the affiliation analysis. So that's really excellent. They got 3 strong responses, so that's good. They'll have some good choices there. There has been a wolf on campus, and so that was interesting. Been a wolf seen repeatedly on campus. As the mayor said, I attended Search's ROAR, Reclaim, Own, and Renew Women's Conference this past Friday and Saturday, and it was top notch. It was really, really good. I believe it might just be the 2nd annual, but anyway. And volunteered at the re-entry simulation, as did Ms. Smith.
And that's your report. Thank you, Ms. Hale. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I was traveling and did not attend last month's airport board or LEPC, but next week I will be in town for both. The LEPC is looking into getting a speaker to talk about the coronavirus, so hopefully they'll be able to get that. I know that the Local Emergency Planning Committee. So we did get some public requests to see if in some forum the assembly could have somebody speak on LEPC or speak on coronavirus, and LEPC picked up that mantle. So that will be at noon on February 12th. It's not guaranteed yet that we have a speaker, at least as far as I know, but I think they got a good line on one. And that's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Edwardson. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. School board last meeting was January 14th, and I was able to attend that. It was a pretty routine meeting as far as the issues that they dealt with. They had a retreat on Saturday the 25th, and I did not attend. I was down at my brother's memorial service. Also, they had a public forum on the budget on 30th of January, and I did not attend because we were at Tom Cashin's and the Talks and Harbors meeting. I attended the AML Legislative Committee meeting. They meet each Friday at 3 p.m. There was a lot of discussion about the bills and the budget process, most of which wasn't any different than what has been reported in the paper. Sometime this week, I think maybe Wednesday or Thursday, they said the governor is going to submit his supplemental budget request, which rumor has will be the largest dollar amount ever in a supplemental budget request. There was some discussion of the motor fuels tax that is going through the Senate. I think if you read in the newspaper, they're going to amend that a little bit to increase the registration fee for electric vehicles and for hybrid vehicles, which has been my concern since I have an electric vehicle. I don't pay the fuel tax, but I still use the roads. And I think they're like doubling it, $200 or something like that for electric vehicles and $150 for hybrids. A couple of the other municipalities that were on the call also asked if any of the increased motor fuels tax was going to be returned back to communities from which it was. And the answer was, under the current legislation, only the amount that's currently in statute would come back, not any additional amount. So that was sort of an issue that some of the other municipalities raised. There was some discussion about the bill to increase the oversight and help staff make it easier to staff and set some higher rules for the VPSO program. There was also some discussion of whether AML should support that when there's lack of law enforcement in urban centers, which I thought was pretty bogus. It was a pretty robust discussion about, yes, there's more members of AML from rural than urban, and yes, we need to support all of our members. But there was some discussion along that. There's also a concept paper out in terms of school bond debt and a possible way to help if the legislature wanted to look at a different way of formulating that, in which it would help those who want a bond but wouldn't necessarily put back the 50% that was vetoed. I did send that to the manager, the finance director, and the mayor. Two of them had comments, the others thought it was good. I also sent it to the superintendent, to the director of administrative services for the schools, and the school board president, and asked for comments and had not heard anything back from them. Just in a concept phase, and pretty much that's it for them. I think that's it for my report.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Lashevsky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I attended several of the things others have attended. LunaFest legislative reception was wonderful to welcome them all back to town. I try to bag as many legislators as I can during those events. They all seem relatively happy to be back, or some of them anyway. Project Homeless Connect, also a great event to see the services and to talk to some of those folks, so that was nice to be able to go. I wanted to to thank the Yakus students for coming. It's always wonderful to have students here. Hopefully they'll take some of those concerns to the school board. And I learned several things, and one is I will remember to say that we have three high schools in Juneau, not two. So that was a useful thing. Sometimes I forget that. And speaking of students, the Drama Debate and Forensics statewide tournament is coming to Juneau February 13th to the 15th, next week after next, and they need 300 judges. And it's a great event. I'm going to be out of town. Unfortunately, I can't go, but I would encourage anybody listening on the radio who has some time to go and judge. Hopefully fellow assembly members will go and cheer those kids on. And I know the teachers are excited that people are coming from all over the state. It's the first time that they were able to wrangle it to Juneau. So that's great. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Glashevsky.
The students that I did that were particularly concerned about the mayor is whether she gets a vacation and lives in a mansion.
Yes.
Those are the two most frequently asked questions.
And the answer is rarely mansion. And no.
You know, they really want to have vacation.
Anyway, there are no presiding officer reports, so we're continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Is there any member of the public that wishes to speak on a non-agenda item? Oh, Mr. Jones.
I didn't see it on the agenda. We all received a email letter from Mr. Heumann. Do we need to officially act to refer that to Lands Committee, or is that something that staff has already taken care of?
Mr. Manager.
Madam Mayor, I've asked Mr. Edwardson to coordinate with the Lands staff and get that on the Lands Committee when they have time.
That's one of the time critical things, or one of the things that I was talking about that might preempt some of the organizational stuff that we have on the agenda.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Edwardson. Anything else before we ask for a public? Okay. I didn't see any public participation on non-agenda items, so we are adjourned.
We're live, we're local at 104.3 KTOO Juneau. And this ends the live broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. The next meeting is February 24th. The time is 9:32, and thanks for listening tonight. I'm Martha Moore, your host. Have a great evening.